Okay, I've been told I can start, and we're running behind schedule a little bit, so I think I ought to get started. I'm ready to start. I don't know about you. If you want to carry on conversations in the periphery, that's okay. Because all that I'll say here at the beginning is kind of pointless, but it means something to me, so hopefully some of you are following along. I'll be talking about parenting as a subject, and we'll be seeing scenes from the television program Parenthood, which is on NBC. How many of you, just out of curiosity, how many of you have seen it? How many of you are like regular, you know, obsessive watchers? So a few of you. John's always up front. Praise God. So I'm just, me and John are going to have a conversation, and you all can eavesdrop. And really, he could give this talk better than I could, probably. We were talking about it in the cab ride from the airport here. I was impressed that he knew one storyline more than I did, and I felt intimidated by that. Can you hear me okay? I can hear myself, but I don't know about you. There's like a feedback. Put it closer to myself? Okay. So I just want to talk to you about my interest in the topic. I'm really not an expert on parenting. I have a 2.5, well, she's probably like 2 years and 6 or 7 months, daughter and a 10-month daughter. So, you know, old hat. you should really listen to Drew. He has like 5 kids. He has more expertise on the topic than I do. But I'm interested in the topic, so not really an expert in terms of being a father, although I think my theology comes into play, and I went to seminary, so hey. I'm a child, though, primarily. I was a son of a father and a daughter, so a lot of my wellspring comes from that experience and just observation in the world, though if I make any mistakes in terms of early childhood education sort of expertise and what I'm talking about, don't hold me to account for that, because you know, I don't really have that training. But like I said, I'm a parent, so I'm trying to think about how to put into practice the sort of theological framework that I have, which is a lot of what we're exploring here at Mockingbird. You know, a sort of reformational kind of theology, understanding of law and gospel, you know, distinctions between being judgmental versus loving, you know, how do we have boundaries yet not crush our children emotionally? Those kinds of things. So I'm thinking a lot about it. And then I was just ordained a year ago, and I got a job at a church. And, of course, I'm a young minister, so the young families asked me if I could do a Sunday school on parenting. I told them I have no expertise on the topic. I told them what I told you. And I think a lot of times in the Christian world, when people are asking for a course on parenting, they're asking for something that's going to teach them sort of like rules, you know, the 7 whatever tips for being the best mom. I was in the airport on the way here, and there was one book that was like the 52 things every mother should absolutely know. And I think that's what they were kind of asking for. Maybe you were expecting that by coming here. That's not what you're going to get, so you might as well leave now. But you'll get something, I think, hopefully a little more profound and touching today. And so I did teach a class on parenting, although my instinct at first, or I should say I facilitate it. A lot of the parents there are, you know, they have more children than I do, and their children are much older than my children. So I really facilitate a discussion. I bring some material. We either listen to, watch it, or I talk about it, and then we just sort of, we talk. And I hope to do some of that with you today. If you don't want to talk, that's fine, but I hope you'll engage. I've been given a remote mic to play a little bit of Phil Donahue with you. So I'm working on this Sunday school course with parents. So a lot of the thinking that goes into this talk came out of the last 9 months of working with that group. Although we didn't really ever talk about the show Parenthood. It's a show I watch. I haven't really brought it into my Sunday school other than maybe I've talked about it. We haven't seen any scenes. So this is a new thing for me. Other than I've been writing about it on a blog, though. Maybe some of you have read some of the stuff I wrote on Parenthood on the blog. And the other thing, like I said when I was introducing this talk, is even if you're not a parent, child-to-parent and parent-to-child analogies are really helpful for understanding law and gospel kind of thinking. They're really helpful for communicating ideas in sermons, for example, because it seems to touch home for a lot of us in really profound ways. If you're like me, you probably grew up in a dysfunctional household. Every household since Adam and Eve was dysfunctional. And so, you know, it sort of hits home. So if you're not here to think about parenting, hopefully what we talk about will help you wrap your mind around some theological themes. So let me talk to you about the title that I came up with. And of course, Dave asked me to come up with a title like 2 months ago, and my thinking's kind of moved on a little bit. But let me tell you why I chose it. So the title is Thou Art My Beloved Child, which, you know, comes from the Bible, where Jesus comes out of the baptismal waters and God the Father says, Thou art my beloved Son, with thee I am well pleased. And if it's true that we're hidden in Christ, saved by his blood, God the Father also says to us, Thou art my beloved son or daughter. Thou art my beloved child. With thee I am well pleased. So I'm curious about this topic of announcement, basically, which is imputation. Imputed righteousness is an announcement of righteousness. So thou art my beloved child. And what that means for parents communicating with their children. And also, what will come out in the scenes that we'll watch today is a story of adoption. We'll watch a subplot about parents who are adopting a 9-year-old boy who have to make a decision whether or not they will say, Thou art my beloved child. With thee I am well pleased. I mean, you think about adoption, a child, if you adopt a child and I haven't adopted a child, maybe some of you have, maybe you were adopted, it's a very unmerited thing. I mean, you just bring someone into your household, especially if they're infants, there's nothing that infant can do to earn their place in your household. You just have to say, Thou art my child. So that's the title is coming from this idea of announcement. Thou art my beloved child. What about parenthood for prodigals? Well, what's the story of the prodigal son? I won't read it to you today, but just help me out. What happens in the story of the prodigal son? Who are the three main characters in the story of the prodigal son? You remember? The father, the two brothers. There's the younger brother and an older brother. What else happens? What's the first act in that story, the prodigal son?
The son asks for
his inheritance. And what happens? Does he get it? He gets the inheritance. And what does he do? He squanders it. He walks off. He goes off into a far country. And so he's in the far country, the younger son with the inheritance. And what happens then? I'm just trying to work through the story. Help me out. You all know it. He ends up with the swines in a very unkosher environment and longing to eat their pods, whatever those are. And what happens then when he's with the pigs? Does anybody remember? He realizes that his own father's servants have it better than he does, and he longs to go back and to have what the servants have. And he does return, doesn't he? And he comes back, and the father does a sort of counterintuitive thing, doesn't he? I mean, in terms of thinking about the world and the way the world works, what's the normal response? What's the normal response to that kind of situation when someone comes home? Judgment. In what way? What's the kind of typical thing someone might say? Shame on you. I told you so. Give you you-know-what. But that's not what happens, is it? Instead, he gives an announcement. He says about the younger son, This is my son. This my son was dead, is alive again. He was lost and is found. So parenthood, for prodigals, I'm trying to relate to this sort of announcement that happens in the story of the prodigal son. But also, think about the definition of prodigal. I think that most people think that the definition of the word prodigal actually means lost. But Tim Keller wrote this book called Prodigal God, which totally called to my attention that that's not actually the definition of the word prodigal. Doesn't mean lost. You know what it means? This is just from, like, you know, when you type in a word for a definition online, this is what came up. This is the definition of the word prodigal. Spending money or resources freely and recklessly, wastefully extravagant, a person who spends money in a recklessly extravagant way. And some synonyms are lavish, profuse, extravagant, wasteful, spendthrift, waster, spender, squanderer. And what Tim Keller says in his book, Prodigal God, is actually that's a better definition for the father in the story, not the son. Of course, he was he squandered his inheritance, the money. But the father does this counterintuitive thing in terms of sort of a reckless, wastelessly extravagant way of loving his son. Basically announcing him righteous when his son had no righteousness. By taking him back and saying, this my son was lost and is found. And he does something similar with the elder brother. What happens after this? What does the elder brother do? Do you remember? Sorry? Yeah, the elder brother's working in the field. This is the older brother of the prodigal son's working in the field, and he comes home and he sees a big party, and he says, I want nothing to do with that. Something is a foul here, and I know it. And he asks the servant, what's going on? And he tells him the story that his brother's come back, the one who's blown the inheritance, and he just sort of sits outside stubbornly smoking a cigarette, saying, I'm not going to go in there. But the father comes out to him also. A different type of person, the elder brother, and he gives an announcement to him and says, son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. Son, you are always with me. To the stubborn son as well, he also gives love, this sort of prodigal, undeserved sort of love. And so we're going to watch some scenes from parenthood that I think relate to these themes of announcement of righteousness when you wouldn't expect it, and sort of prodigality relating to the parents and not so much the children. And you'll see these in a couple different dynamics. People are giving grace to the parents. Parents are giving grace to the children, and the grace comes back from the children to the parents. Make note of that. There's this sort of ecosystem that's necessary for grace to exist in the household that comes out in these scenes. It's not simply that I'm talking about parents giving this prodigal love to their children, but there's all these people involved. And it can go the other way. There's a lot of judgment as well that's coming from different places. And so the backstory to the subplot that we'll watch, if you haven't seen it, is there's the show Parenthood is about this one family called the Bravermans. There's the matriarch and patriarch who are the grandparents. There are several adult children who have their own families. And it's very psychologically in touch show. It's very honest and true to life, and that's why I'm interested in it. And one of the families is Julia and Joel, who I said are adopting a boy. They have a daughter named Sydney, who's about 7, and they're adopting a 9-year-old Latino boy named Victor, who comes into their lives on their doorstep because they're trying to adopt and they're having bad luck. In the previous season, they thought they were going to adopt this one child and it didn't pan out. And here comes Victor into their lives. And so this first set of clips that we're going to watch is they're trying to get Victor, and they haven't officially adopted him on the books yet. They're kind of like foster parents, but it's in the works to finalize the adoption. But here we're going to watch where they're trying to get Victor to have a hobby. They think it might be good for him to play a sport or pick up an instrument. And the thing that they sort of choose for him is to play baseball.
Made me go to swim team. Boy, I hated it. I had to get up at 6 a.m.
I'm sorry. I totally messed up that introduction.
But they made me go.
Can you just pause that? Sorry.
Yeah. glad that I
The title of the episode threw me off because it's all called Left Field. But this one actually has nothing to do with baseball. That's the second set of clips that we're going to watch. This is one where Victor, this set of clips is Victor doesn't want to go to school. He's been calling in sick for like 3 days. And Joel and Julia are like, you've got to go to school. We know that you're messing with us. And they're trying to get him to go to school. And so here is Julia dropping off Victor in Sydney. And Victor again is... not wanting to go to school. And just pay attention in these scenes to these ideas of announcement, the whole sort of dynamics of the ecosystem needed for a family of grace and mercy and forgiveness, and also some sort of parallels with the story of the prodigal son tale. And we have two siblings here. So go ahead and start that again. Sorry.
Good swimmer, right, Sid?
Yeah. Remember that one time you came to my swim class and you almost drowned me?
Yes, I remember that, but you didn't drown because you're such a strong swimmer. That was great. You learned. Okay, let's go, guys.
Let's go. Come on. Are you coming?
It's okay. You can walk in with Sydney.
Come on. Let's go.
Okay. Victor, you have to go to school. You can't miss 3 days in a row.
My stomach still hurts.
Sydney? Go in, okay, sweetie?
Okay.
Okay. Victor, I know new school can be scary. And I know that it might still be scary living with us. But I need you to be brave for me. Okay? I need you to do this. Money. Okay. I will stay right here. You go to school, but if you need me, if you need anything, I'll be right here.
All day?
All day.
You swear?
You know, pinky swear?
You see, this is later that night where Julia's telling what happened to her husband Joel at the playground or at the school when she's dropping him off.
Hey.
Hi. I'm just catching up on some stuff.
That's 3 a.m.
Well, I didn't go to work today.
What?
I was dropping the kids off at school and Victor, you know, he didn't want to go. He just, it was like he couldn't get out of the car.
Okay, so he didn't go again.
No, he did go to school. But I told him that if he went in, that I would stay outside.
All day.
I know, it sounds ridiculous, but you should have seen him. The whole time that he's been here, he's been so tough. But I looked in his eyes, and he was so scared.
It just made me remember that he's a little boy. I couldn't leave him like that. And I'm sorry. I know we have to put some discipline there and establish some boundaries, but I couldn't, you know?
You're amazing.
And screw it up.
So.
I'm going to switch to this mic just because I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on these scenes. Rather than showing all the scenes at once, I want to put them in digestible chunks. And from that clip, just my own meditation, the sort of theme that I'm interested in throughout is sort of the counterintuitive, the paradoxical, the way that the parent or the child or someone else in their life does the sort of counterintuitive, but therefore, i.e., the loving thing. And it often yields the result that we would have wanted from, remember what she says, discipline and boundaries? That's what I love about that last scene, because that's what I thought when the young families came to me, they wanted a course on, was discipline and boundaries. And of course, those are things that I'm not trying to throw those out, as JD brought up in his own talk. Though that's not sort of the end-all, be-all, nor is it the thing that we should sort of concern ourselves with always with children, I think. Especially, hopefully, these scenes resonate with you somehow. What does it bring up in you? Any thoughts so far? Any reactions just on this little set of clips on with Julia dropping Victor off? And I'll hand you the mic. Okay, thanks, John.
Two things that stand out to me. I love when she comes out of the car as the people are honking in the carpool line, and she puts her finger out like that in a way that is just so brave, and really her concern is for this boy. And then the other thing that is interesting that I know, because I'm totally obsessed with the show Parenthood, is that she's actually a very high-powered corporate attorney. So when she decides in that moment to take the day off of work, she is actually making a huge sacrifice that has real consequences, and that's why she's up at 3 a.m. And so it's not just like she wasn't going to be doing anything all day, and so she can do this and didn't think she'd have to. It's that she's taking a personal hit because she's so concerned with him. And I just find that to be incredibly moving, the steadfast committedness of her love for this boy who is not biologically her own.
Yeah, the bit with the horns honking, and you'll see that in some future clips, is this sort of pressure from the world, and usually our peers, fellow parents, to look good, to have healthy children, not to take too long when dropping them off at the line at the elementary school. Those kinds of things play huge in our lives, and right now, you know, I was having a conversation with my friend Jamie earlier that there are all these different baby carriers that you can buy. And some of them, you know, they might hurt the hips of the child. And so other people will look upon you with disdain if you use a baby Bjorn and not a wrap or something like that. I mean, maybe what might have been something different when you were raising children. Or if you don't have children, it'll be something new then. And there are all these kinds of things, these pressures we feel from the world, specifically from our peers, to be the best parents. I saw another hand. Someone else had a reaction. Yeah. really wish we were in a smaller space, because I do want to be interactive with you. What I'm trying to model for you as well is just how I teach in facilitating a class, and I find it more effective usually in a smaller environment, but thank you for working with me.
I thought getting in the back seat was very powerful. She met him exactly where he was and allowed him, facilitated him being able to take the next very small step. There was nothing, she wasn't a parent looming over him, she wasn't the parent talking from the front seat, all the things that normally happen. Getting in the back seat was, I thought, really integral to what went the next frames.
Yeah, entering his sort of suffering, as it were, the back seat or whatever it is. I've heard from people it's helpful to get on your knees, for example, when talking with small children. I mean, that's a lot like what Jesus Christ did for us, isn't it? In terms of becoming incarnate in human form and bearing our suffering, getting in the back seat of our lives. I want to move on to look at this next set of clips, which I already introduced. I apologize, but here again is Joel is with Victor at a baseball practice because they've kind of, you know, forced him to take on a hobby as a good middle class American would. So here he is at baseball practice, and notice also what's happening with Joel, with both of them. And then we'll see a clip after the practice where they come back together at home and how Joel displays some prodigal grace to him.
Attaboy, Jack. Nice swing.
He keeps doing this thing with his elbow.
At least he's making contact. See, Dylan spent a whole summer playing Xbox. You know, he's shocked that he's rusty.
Victor loves Xbox. My boy, Victor. Sorry, that was a terrible segue. He's new, and I'm new. I'm Joel.
Hey, I'm Mike.
Nice to meet you.
Hey.
How are you?
So, what position does he play?
You know, we're still trying to figure that out, but he's, you know, I was a pitcher.
Oh, so, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, there he is, my boy. All right, Victor. You got this, buddy.
It's a big kid.
Yeah.
It's a nice try. Hey, choke up for me, Victor.
Okay.
Just move your grip up like this. Nice and easy, okay? You get the next one.
You got this.
It's all right.
Maybe he's more of a pitcher.
Yeah.
Like you.
Just let the bat do the work. Relax, buddy.
I'll get it.
You don't throw bats on my field. That's too loud.
Screw this and screw you.
Hey.
Why did you and Julia make me do that?
Buddy, it's your first at bat. You got plenty of time. Come on.
I'm not back going back.
Yes, you are.
You
Come
can't
on.
Make me.
Victor?
You're not my real dad.
So this is later at night when they're back home.
Just keep it just like this. And he's got that distant look.
Okay.
Yeah, freak out.
Oh, hey, can you shorten my skirt?
No.
Oh.
No.
No. That'd be cool, though. This is so cool.
What you doing?
Not playing baseball.
You want to talk about what happened?
Nope.
Okay, I'm going to talk about what happened. And you can listen. I need you to shut that down. I was incredibly proud of you.
No, you weren't. I struck out and I threw a bat.
Well, I didn't love the throwing the bat part. Or the yelling at the coach part. But right up until then, you went out there and you tried something you'd never done before with a bunch of kids you never met. That's brave. That's so incredibly brave. Are you scared? I'd have been. You know, buddy, I get so excited about you being a part of this family that I forget, you know, that everything is so new. And I guess I forgot what it was like to be the new kid. I'm still figuring this out. How to be your dad. But I love baseball, and I, from what I can tell, I think he'd really like it too. I'm not gonna force you to do anything you don't want to do. I'm not gonna force you to go back. But if you take some time, you decide it's something you'd like to do, then you just come tell me, because I'd like to help you with it. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, there's so much I could say. That's on my mind. And I hope you'll have some reactions. By the way, a lot of people have told me that this show, like, makes them cry every episode. I don't know if that does that for you. I have, like, zero emotion. I watch it with my wife, and she's just bawling throughout. I guess I'm just not as in touch. Although, it does touch me. The waterworks don't ever go on. I don't know what it is, but a couple things. The situation with Joel, with the guys, that's the kind of thing I was trying to talk about, this sorts of pressure that we feel, the tension that they captured cinematically with the striking out, and then, you know, maybe he's a pitcher like you, that kind of thing. Hopefully that resonates with you. It does with me. Like I said, this is what I'm trying to talk about, that the need for the parents also to receive love in order to give love to their children is very important. And therefore, if we are experiencing these pressures and the judgments from the world, the opposite is true, that we can easily get into the sort of judgmental, you know, give them you know what sort of punishing them kind of mentality all the time. But what happens when they go home? Joel, again, like Julia in the earlier scenes, does the counterintuitive. And one of the things on my mind is the relationship to the story of the prodigal son. The story of the prodigal son isn't a very good story about repentance, really, if you want to think about that as a picture of what, you know, a hearty repentance looks like. It isn't one. You know, he rehearses his speech when he comes home and doesn't even really get it out of his mouth, but the father forgives him anyway, and he does the work for the most part. The son doesn't. And there's a parallel that I see, if we want to put it in 21st century terms, with what Joel does in the bedroom with Victor, who's on the iPad. And he does not what I expected when I first watched him walk in that room. Any other reactions to this bit or anything we've seen so far? Love to hear. Yeah.
Mostly by the end, after the conversation was over, Dad says what he wanted to say, and his son goes right back to the iPad. And as a parent, I know when I've had those talks with my kids, I always want a reaction. And, you know, I feel like I walk out of the room and I've just done something therapeutic for myself and haven't really benefited him. But hearing it like the kid hears it, to me, or what I watched was, he was probably thinking about that ever since all the swing and misses. I'm a failure, can't please my dad, and that was always on his mind. And but then when Dad came in and has a talk, and then he finishes, is okay, picks up the iPad again. And to me, when I've had my kids come out of the room later, they're not thinking about it anymore. The moment's passed, Dad's forgiven me, or it's been rectified or the problem wasn't as big as I thought it was and now it's gone and they're just able to go back to what they do. So.
Tell me your name. Brian, bless you. That was an amazing thing. What you're seeing with Joel is he's basically absolving Victor, like what you might do with your own children. And we don't see the results of absolution right away. I can say that as a minister. it takes a long time. And it's fits and starts and regressions. And a parent can likewise absolve their children in a manner that a minister could stand before a church or in his office and absolve a parishioner. Actually, in more powerful ways, a parent can have that kind of effect. But they might go back to the iPad, and we think, gee whiz, you know, it's not working. But that's why I'm showing you several clips from this subplot throughout, so that you can see how long it takes with Victor, and actually, it kind of needs to get worse to get better, which is where we're going to go next. But it looks like there's one more thought before we see the next set of clips.
Just thinking about looking at the father and seeing how it seemed like he was maybe fighting against the instinct to see his identity wrapped up in the performance of the son as well, where there was sort of that going on the sidelines among the fathers and the potential to feel some embarrassment at the performance of his son. And I think oftentimes sports, at least in American context, brings out the worst of those episodes where parents have those expectations on children and the anger is because they feel, you know, embarrassed because of what it reflects upon them or what they think it reflects upon them. And so to see that he doesn't do that and instead sees the other, is really focused, it seems, throughout on the son's perspective. And so instead of being ashamed at his failure, as far as the performance goes, recognizes his bravery for stepping out onto the field, and still, you know, recognizes that throwing the bat and yelling at the coach wasn't appropriate. But as far as the greater context of what he was doing and the position that he put himself in, he was honoring the effort that his son made and not looking at success in the way that it might be measured by other people.
Yeah, that brilliant. The sort of the attachment to our children as almost like us. You brought out, there's a necessary thing to do as a parent is not to, I mean, you basically have to detach. It sounds sort of unloving, but it's actually a healthy thing to do, to detach yourself and see them as separate beings and not you. And there was something else that you brought up that I found really interesting, but now I'm blanking. What was the last thing you said?
Talking about honoring the son's effort.
Yes, being a detective of the good thing, which was actually the smaller part, just the effort of going and praising him for that. It's so easy to focus on the throwing of the bat and to come home and just sort of be heavy-handed about that. And he didn't brush it under the rug. He did acknowledge it, but he focuses, his main focus is on the thing to praise, the place of grace. One more thought, and then we'll look at the next set of clips.
I was just thinking about how the father does absolve the son, but he does bring up the thing about the bat. There's still that, like, but that I guess maybe Paul was talking about yesterday. I don't know if he was introducing you, Drew, but that there was, like, still that but. And so maybe that, I don't know what to do with that, if that's just like the difference between an earthly father and like God, our father, or how to think about that.
Yeah. I see one more comment and we'll move on.
I think it's more a question than a comment. What I saw was that the child brought up bad behavior, not the father. And then the father said, well, yeah, that wasn't the part I liked. Would he have said anything if Victor hadn't brought it up?
Yeah, who knows? But you can see that it was on his mind. Yeah, but the father wanted to go in and bestow grace upon him. And the son brought up the thing that he would... I mean, he's sitting in his room depressed. I mean, he had some sense of guilt. And like you said, he doesn't brush it under the rug. He acknowledges it, doesn't ignore it. Let's look at the next set of clips. This is it getting worse. Remember that they're adopting this child, and they kind of need to make a decision. And they're at that point. They're meeting with social workers, and Victor seems to be making life difficult in their house, and they're kind of like, is this really the right fit? And here is it at its absolute worst.
Hey, tell your brother dinner's almost ready, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Dinner's almost ready.
So?
Can I try?
No, just leave me alone.
Who's your real mom?
What?
Well, you said you wanted to show your test to your real mom. Who is she?
What's it to you? Just be quiet.
Did she do something bad?
No.
Well, at the schoolyard, they say she's in jail.
She's not in jail, stupid!
Well, if she's not in jail, why didn't she come see you?
Just shut up!
Your mom must not love you. Your mom doesn't love you because you're
a
bad kid.
Leave me alone!
Whoa, whoa, whoa! You guys okay?
Just one quick comment as Ethan's finding the next clip is here they're at a restaurant later that night with Julia's brother Crosby and his wife Jasmine, and not later that night, but, you know, the next day or something. And this is all in the background, the throwing of the bat. And if we want to draw parallels, I would say that Sydney's a lot like the elder brother type in the family. At this point, I hope you're seeing that. But anyway, here is what I was talking about, the sort of necessary ecosystem of grace. And look at what happens between Julia and her brother Crosby.
This to you. She called me. I returned her call.
All right. What did you talk about? What was the conversation?
I basically said that the last time we met, you just had a momentary lapse. You know, you got cold feet. That's all.
I just had cold feet. That's all. Yep.
Yes, honey.
Can you stop trying to shame me into this?
Shame you?
Yes, you are. Because
are you kidding me?
Me. Because it's me that he's not bonding
it's
with.
Not
just it's just
you.
Me that has any kind of doubts about it.
I know.
It's just me.
Are you
it's
kidding me?
Me?
You know, I have doubts too.
No, you don't.
Yes.
don't try to make me feel better that way. That's stupid. It doesn't work.
Okay. Well, you know what? I have to be this way because there's not a lot of room for doubts on this side. You seem to be doubting enough for both of us.
It's on that street.
I know where it is.
Who's eating here? What's good?
The
short rib.
Yeah.
Ooh, insane.
Are you enrolling Sydney in karate? Because Jabbar would love to have her in his class.
If you do that, you should have Victor also enroll.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be fun, all three of them? And at Christmas, we could do like a UFC kind of bracket.
Yeah. Not everything's a competition, Crosby.
Karate. Well, no, everything is a competition. In the Braverman household. Right, yeah. Julia? We love to compete, right? Julia. Everything's a competition, right?
Yes, everything is a competition with the Bravermans. Yes, that is true.
Ooh, they have burrata. I'm getting burrata for sure to kick things off.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Remember when I said, I can't wait to get the burrata? And her mom said, what's burrata? I'm like, it's just really tender, very soft. I said, well, if you...
I'm making you my partner.
I think
can
it's...
Can you order me just... Whatever. Thank
yeah.
you. Pardon me.
You mean to drink? Or?
And eat, whatever. Is everything okay?
What's that about?
We had a really great day.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Buddy, what's going on? You're upset we're ordering the short ribs? What's going on?
I'm just jealous.
You're jealous?
No.
What's happening?
Oh, God, for us. It's just hard with Victor, so.
Like what, specifically?
Like, you know, we've had all this time together and it just doesn't seem like we're progressing. You know, he just, I'm not being overdramatic. He just doesn't like me at this point. And it's so hard to see that that's going to change. And I don't know. Joel is fine. They're great. They have no problems. But, you know, if I don't see something that tells me that someday maybe we can have a loving relationship, then, you know, then I shouldn't be his mom, because he should be able to have that with someone.
Listen, do you want my two cents?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
When Jasmine came and dropped Jabbar off, I didn't have a single clue on how to be a parent. I mean, it just happened in one second, yet she was expecting me to be a dad, and I didn't know what to do. And you know who I watched, who I studied, who I looked up to? You. You are such a good parent. You are so patient, you're so calm, and you're so involved. And I watched you, and look, I could only aspire to be as good as you. And Victor hates you, okay? You know who I hated when I was 9 years old? Mom. Remember she was on her crazy health food kick and only put wheat germ cookies in her lunchbox?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was deplorable, and I hated her. I loved her, but I also hated her, but I didn't tell her that I loved her. I only said I hated her. And that little guy needs you, and he loves you, and I know he loves you, because it's impossible not to love you. For real. Listen to me.
What are you trying to do?
That for me was the most memorable scene of the whole season. Crosby and his lifting of Julia's spirit by, again, an announcement of righteousness, which will later, as we'll see, bear fruit. But I don't want to ignore the throwing of the bat. At that point, just think about you being the parent who's adopting this child. I mean, maybe if it was your own natural child, you know, you'd have a particular response, but one for whom you can choose to bring into your household, and it's still in the works. You haven't signed the dotted line, as it were, and he's just tossed in a... He has a habit of throwing bats. This kid throws bats all the time. And he just... Not only did he bust our window, he almost killed our other daughter, you know? And there are other things that we haven't seen, because I had to be so selective. There's a scene where he calls the police on Joel and Julia and says that... I think he says that they're abusing him. You know, there are all these things going on that's led to this moment where Julia breaks down in the restaurant. And then Crosby, again, announces, he absolves her, and gives her the word that she needs to hear to move on. Any other thoughts based on these scenes, or the whole thing so far, the whole enchilada? Yeah.
I thought that first scene was a really cool literal picture of parents and, you know, our earthly and godly parents being really like a safety net and a soft place to land. And I think that, I mean, that's why, you know, that's why a divorce at any age, you know, so profoundly affects kids, I feel like, because in many ways that's, you know, that safety net that was once there maybe, you know, is now fractured. And I think about it in my life, even with like, you know, I'm single and but always knowing that, you know, there's nothing that I could do to not have a guest bed at my folks' house, you know. And it's scary as you know, as your folks get older and realizing, you know, how much that can affect you. And I think that picture was, you know, he just needed to know that his mom was outside and that, you know, if anything went wrong, he could just run outside. And I think that, you know, the second clip there, the absolution is such a powerful thing. And I think it really you know, I think when there's a lot of judgment in the home, I've seen it from my own life, and I really had, you know, I had an experience where one parent was very judgmental and the other was extremely absolving, and so, and I think it in many ways, if you have two judgmental parents, it's a lot of kids know how to kind of game the system, where it's like, oh, I can do this as long as I get good grades, and it just encourages this kind of splitting your life the way that, you know, Mockingbird always talks about. I think that, you know, showing absolution to your kids really, I mean, encourages them to live a somewhat integrated life, you know, as early as possible. You know, I know that there was several times in my life where, you know, very powerful instances of absolution that I still remember, you know, to this day.
The first thing that you said I want to focus on is the safety net of home. And remember that our touchstone here theologically or scripturally is the parable of the prodigal son. And that's what the younger son had to go home to, was he had an inkling that perhaps his father was the one who would welcome him back, maybe. Otherwise, I doubt he would have gone. And I've talked to my wife about this, like, what do we actually want as parents to provide for our children in the long run? And the image I can think of is something of a sanctuary, a place where they can come back and always have a guest bed, like you said. And that the seeds of that begin in childhood. By you know, bestowing that kind of love on them in the beginning and throughout, so that they'll know that that's the place they can come to in adulthood, hopefully. Any other thoughts or questions so far? I hope I'm not losing you. Let's watch the last set of clips, because we'll see resolution and hopefully a happy ending. go ahead, Ethan.
Doing? Reading a book. What do you want?
I want you to come to my adoption ceremony.
Why?
Because you're my sister.
Fine. Get out of my room.
Okay. Looks like she's gonna need a dress.
Cool.
Oh. Wow.
I hope you found that poignant, because remember the relationship that they have. And you'll see that again in this scene. Notice what happens between the two children, but notice the whole thing, but notice what happens between the two children. And also pay attention to what Victor says at the end of this scene, which is his adoption ceremony at the courthouse. The thing he says at the end to Julia.
He's a lizard.
This'll take a while.
That's a good idea. Just
throw. Okay, all right. Come on in. Come in, please. Come in. Okay. Close the door. Okay, everyone, please. Hello, everyone, please. All right, welcome.
Thank you.
All right, so Joel and Julia Graham.
Yes.
Yeah, hi.
So now you understand that by signing this adoption agreement form, you agree to take care of Victor as your own legal child. Right, to provide for his health, his welfare, his educational needs?
We do.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Victor, do you understand? Do you agree to this adoption?
Yeah.
Okay, then. All right, well, then, unless anyone has anything to add, I'm ready to make it official.
Your Honor,
yes, sir.
If I may. As grandparents, my wife, Camille, and myself will do the best we can to give Victor what we've given our own children, which is our undying love and support. And also, being a baseball aficionado, I would like to teach him the art of fielding the hot grounder.
Okay.
But hey, that can wait till later. And
Your Honor, I'm sorry, if I may. I'm Adam Braverman. I'm Deacon Camille's oldest son, and I promise to be your uncle. Listen, your Aunt Christine and I are no substitute for your stellar parents. but we promise to be there for you no matter what.
You can always come to me, Victor, if you need help, and I promise I won't rat you out to your mom. I can give you dating advice.
And then I can help repair the terrible damage that her dating advice does. What is this?
Okay. I'm willing to teach you how to ride a motorcycle and play an instrument. Your girl troubles will vanish immediately once you know those two things.
Yeah. And you can come to my house anytime. We can play Xbox and you can sleep over until...
Now that you're adopted, you can officially hold my lizards.
Okay.
I promise to love you, buddy.
Yeah. No matter what.
Me too. Okay.
It's quite a family you're coming into. All right, on this day, January 24, 2013, Joel and Julia Graham have officially adopted Victor Graham. You're now legally their child. You have all the rights of any natural child.
Okay.
I will hereby sign this order confirming the adoption.
All right.
Judge, can I use your gavel?
Sure, why not?
Oh, no.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
Well, sorry.
Beautiful family.
They're something, aren't they?
There's some inside things happening. If you haven't seen the show, that's the whole family there. But you got the gist based on what you've seen. Thou art my beloved son. With thee I am well pleased. Thou art my sister. Come to my adoption ceremony. Thou art my brother, and then touches him on the shoulder, as I often do when ministering with people, and it seems to have a profound effect when it comes with words of the gospel. Thou art my grandson, I will teach you fielding the hot grounder. Thou art my nephew, thou art my cousin. And then finally, thou art my mom. Did you see that? He called me mom because he hasn't the whole time. So a lot of what I've been meditating on with this is this theme of announcement. And basically, I'm giving you a new synonym for imputation, basically. If you know that word, if you don't, forget about it. Because hopefully watching these scenes and things like it put some sort of indelible print in your mind of what the gospel is and how God works with us when we don't deserve it, yet while we were sinners, he adopts us. Just as Julia and Joel adopted Victor, the one who at times seemed to be the least likely candidate, the one with the bat-throwing habit. And I'll just end it there without a Q&A because we've had talk throughout, and I'm going to keep it to about an hour. Thank you for coming. If you haven't seen Parenthood, it's available on Hulu and Netflix. You can buy it. And we don't know whether there'll be a season 5. Pray for season 5. Because I find it to be one of the best things out there. And if you like this, if you like Parenthood, see Friday Night Lights, because it's produced by the same guy, Jason, how do you say his last name? Kadams, I think. If you like Parenthood, watch Friday Night Lights, because it's actually sometimes deeper. And it has a pastoral figure in the coach. So Parenthood and Friday Night Lights will give you tons of material to think about in terms of parenting and ministering and being a child of a parent and just a human in the world. Thank you for coming. Praise God. Enjoy your free time.